Our next guest is a longtime journalist and columnist at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and he's Black. And that's gotten attention from some of his readers, often very negative attention. In a new piece, he writes about the impact of years and years of racist hate mail and voicemail and email, and why he thinks it's time to share those messages publicly after years of mostly keeping quiet about it. James Causey is a columnist and projects reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. His latest article is headlined, "I'm Worn from Years of Racial Slurs, but I'll No Longer Be Silent About Bigotry." James, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You've got a little reading from your piece that I think would be a great way to start things off. Can you share that with us?
Sure. I start out by saying, I've long kept the scales of racist hatred I've received to myself, often not telling my editors about it, but I've come to realize how corrosive that is. Picture an old home weathered by decades of rain, snow, hail, and other harsh elements. You don't notice the changes month to month or even year to year. But when you look at an old photo, you realize how worn it has become. Actually, that's what I've become. I've become worn by the years of hate mail that I've received.
And you talk about a turning point. You'd been a reporter before. When you became a columnist, that's when you noticed this really pick up. Can you talk about some of the responses that that you got that started wearing on you?
Yeah, you know, I actually received my first racist email early on. Actually, it was a letter early on in my career. It's like in 2008, after I had come back from Harvard University on a Nieman Fellowship, and I was on an editorial board, and my editor at the time decided to give me the opportunity to write columns. And one of the first columns I wrote, a couple of days go by and I get a letter in the mail and it's calling me all kinds of N-words. And it was the first time I ever received anything like that. So I was shocked and to the point where I didn't really know what to do. So I just put the letter in my in a drawer at work. But I would come back and keep reading it. And I just didn't understand where that hate came from. But then other letters soon followed. And then after a while, it was dozens and dozens and dozens of letters. So I created this wall of hate to sort of symbolize the hate that people had, not just towards me, but towards people of color in my city.
And to be really clear here, people might hear that you received racist hate mail and they might think, oh, you know, maybe racially charged or subtly coded racist language. No. This is like, I mean, flat out, I don't think anybody would dispute looking at some of the examples you share. This is like just flat out racist hate mail. Could you talk about some of the things you've seen?
Yeah, I've been called every name that you could think of, from the N-word to coon to monkey to people saying I should be hung from a tree. And I know earlier you said it was just emails, letters, and phone calls, but I also received text messages and even people sent letters to my home. My wife quite a bit. So it's just been nonstop. And, you know, one thing that I can say, though, is that the letters that I received and the emails that I received since this column has run have been mostly positive. But it's the pain is still there. You know, after you've been weathered, you know, the weathering doesn't go away. It stays with you for a long time. And I've seen other colleagues of mine who have gone through the same thing, like the former columnist Eugene Kane, who passed away, and even Greg Stanford. More so Eugene Kane, who received a lot of it, just tons of it, because he would tackle racism head on. So he faced the people who fought against that.
And you tackle racism head on in some of your pieces, but it doesn't seem to matter if that's what you're talking about or not. There's one article you talk about a father-daughter dance where somebody went through and replaced references to Black people with the N-word and like sent that edited version to you?
Yes. I talked about taking, not being able to take my daughter to the daddy-daughter dance, something that we participated in for years and years. It's just a great event where fathers get to spend a whole day with their daughter and dance the night away with them. And it's just such a positive event. I was promoting the event saying that, you know, my daughter aged out, so I couldn't take her. And I was feeling kind of sad about it, but I still wanted people to go. And somebody took the liberty to take my column and cross out every reference that I made towards people of color, Black people, and put the N-word. And but I've received so many things, man. I could write a book on it. And it just shows the hatred that exists, but not just towards me. They want, it's the hatred toward people of color. And that's the point I really want to bring across, because I could handle some of it, but when you're attacking just people just based on their color, that's just, it's so irritating and so frustrating that it bothers you. And, you know, I try to rise above it. Don't get me wrong. I've even offered to take people out to eat and have coffee with them just to discuss some of the issues that occur in the Central City, but only to be turned down or to be criticized or saying that you're just setting me up and that kind of stuff. So some people really don't want to have real discussions about race and racism in this country.
Talking to James Causey from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, talking about his recent piece on years of hate mail in various forms. He's received racist hate mail and why he's starting to talk about it now. And that's a big point there, James. You and many of your journalistic colleagues you've talked to about this, the thing you do over the years has been, you don't talk about it. You don't share this in the public. What led you to say, no more, I am going to share what I'm getting with the rest of the world?
Well, yeah. So I think we've all heard what happened to Taylor Lumpkin, a former Channel 4 broadcast reporter. She was at Country Thunder, a country music event, and a white man came up to her and called her the N-word in front of all these people. She's an African-American woman, and she took to Twitter to talk about it, and she received over 1.3 million people in coming out to support her and basically saying, oh my God, I can't believe this happened. And so some of my colleagues at work were making a big deal out of this. And I was like, that's nothing compared to what I received. And I proceeded to write a column about it. And my editors were like, whoa, we didn't know that this was going on. And so we took a step back and they really wanted me to take the time to really explain what I had experienced. And some of the people who read it had no idea. So I just wanted to put it out there. But what I after I wrote it, it was so many journalists of color who reached out to me that said, this happened to me too. And I got just the same kind of stories that happened to you happened to me. And this shouldn't happen just doing your job. No other profession, you go to work and you open your mail and you call it N-word. No other profession should you be taking phone calls and emails and texts where people calling you out your name, sending you letters to your home, threatening you.
And James,
go ahead.
Oh, we lost you for a moment there, but I wanted to ask, you've coped with these issues in various ways over the years. For a while, you had a wall of hate set up in your office. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so my wall of hate I created as a way to sort of fight back against this hatred. So what I would do is collect all the letters, and it was mainly to make the wall of hate. You had to call me the N-word at least once or twice. You had to criticize people in the African-American community. And when you did, I just put it up on my wall, and what started out just being like a few dozen soon turned into several hundreds. And so when people would come into my cubicle and they would say, what's that? I would just tell them, just read for yourself, and you would see it. And they were all in shock. So it was just my way of, it's sort of like a silent protest against hate. But I think it was, in a way, it was just my way of just kind of dealing with it, because it was sort of those things like, as a Black journalist, you just say this comes with the job, but it shouldn't come with the job. Nobody should have to deal with that.
You started off talking about the wear, like the old house worn for years. Does it feel any different now that you are sharing this publicly, now that you wrote about what you've been seeing for years, really for the first time?
Honestly, I think the only thing that feels different is that it's out there, but I don't think anything's going to change. You can't, if it was simple enough to end racism through a column, it would have ended a long time ago. I just think some people will, it won't change their racist ways. They probably just won't send me the information anymore, but I don't think anything else would change.
What advice would you give to a young Black journalist listening and maybe listening with some trepidation hearing what you've gone through?
Don't be silent. Don't do what I did. What I did was I remained silent because I was taught that this kind of comes along with the job. That's kind of how I learned it from old veteran African-American journalists, especially columnists, that this is just kind of what you have to deal with. But today's journalists, they're different. They don't deal with that kind of stuff. And we have an issue. We don't have enough journalists of color in our newsrooms and in the media anyway. And if we really want to make impact and we want them to stay, we have to find ways to make sure that they're comfortable and that they could do their jobs without facing racism. If we don't do that, we're gonna lose many more journalists of color, and it's gonna hurt not just us. It's gonna hurt everyone because a lot of stories won't get told.
Now, a common theme, James, in the letters you write about is a white person presumably asking you to fix the black community in some way, as though somehow you are responsible for all the black people in the greater Milwaukee area. I want to flip things around. Talk to maybe white people listening who would never write that letter, but maybe they know somebody who would. What would you want that person to do to take what you're saying seriously and maybe try to make a difference?
I think if you know someone who's doing something like this, it's your responsibility to stand up and talk to them. I mean, I can't do it by myself, and no black person could end racism by themselves. It's going to take a worldwide effort, and it starts with just individuals, just talking to people, and and I've always encouraged people to get to know someone who doesn't look like you. Go out to eat with people who don't look like you. Spend time with people who don't look like you. If your circle just looks like everybody that's white or everybody's black, you need to change that circle of friends and include people and bring in other people, because that's the only way that we can see that we have a lot more in common than we realize. So you just have to speak up. And if you don't speak up, it's you're part of the problem.
James, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate it.
That's James Causey, columnist and projects reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He talked to us about his recent article. You can find it under the headline, "I'm Worn from Years of Racial Slurs, but I'll No Longer Be Silent About Bigotry." We'll get a link up to that at WPR.org/Central Time.